Talking physical therapy next here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my two guests, Lori Tyne Brody, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and Bill Boisenault, associate professor of physical therapy at the UW-Madison. Happy to have them both back and certainly glad to have you listening in. Give us a call with your question. Although I got to tell you, all the lines are filled right now at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org. Lori, welcome back. Good to see you.
Good to be back.
And Bill, great to see you as well.
Thank you, as usual. Glad to be back.
And, well, turn on your microphone. That'll help. There. Now we're...
Now I'm coming through.
Now you're coming through.
I'm still glad to be back.
Exactly. I think he had to row back, though, given the weather this weekend. I thought about all of the summer sports and what we might talk about today. And the first thing that came to mind this weekend was rowing because of all the rain.
All the rain.
There was water everywhere.
Chainsawing trees and limbs that came down.
That's another one. Holding umbrellas, the shoulder activity of holding umbrellas under pelting rain comes to mind.
It was a tough weekend for some people.
It's not the usual summer activities in Wisconsin.
Yeah, even the northern part of the state had, I think, 6 inches of rain over the weekend, at some point over the weekend, which is really good for them.
Yes,
because
they're dry.
Yeah.
That part of the state is really dry.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, let's go right to the phones here and see what's on everybody's mind. Al in Land O'Lakes, you're up first. Hi, Al.
Hi, how you doing?
Great, thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
Hey, the sun's out up here.
That's good.
First time. And I've heard your show, and this is the first time that I've been able to get through on the physical therapy part. I'm over 60, and I had degenerative joint disease, and I've had my knees replaced, and I'm attached to a pain clinic up here, Marshfield Clinic. Anyway, I'm on Medicare, and the money's real tight, and they want to do an MRI and a bone density test on me. And I'm just wondering if this would be worth spending the money at this point, as far as my spondylolisthesis and my lower back goes.
Okay, so you have spondylolisthesis?
That's easy for you to say, Larry.
Yeah, a spondylolisthesis, it's a slip of one vertebra on the next, and there's two main categories. There's one that tends to happen in younger populations where they actually have a fracture in the back of their back, and that allows the vertebra to slide forward. There's another type, degenerative spondylolisthesis, and that goes along with arthritic changes. The disc space narrows between vertebrae, and that allows for a slip to occur, usually in a forward direction. The big so what with it, or potential complication, is that it can put pressure on nerves. And so if you are having weakness, numbness that is progressive, if you're having troubles going to the bathroom, that's where they consider surgery and need to consider surgery. And that's where the MRI comes into play. So, Al, with most of the patients I've worked with and physicians I work with, if they're doing an MRI, it's typically in conjunction with, are they considering surgery, yes or no? So if that's something that's strongly being considered, then the MRI is probably a really good test to have and a test that you would need to have.
Is there a high success with this surgery?
Are they talking a fusion?
Yeah.
Would it be one level, two levels?
Well, I've had a lot of success with epidural injections and facet injections, but I've been doing this for years. And I have a lot of chronic pain and all the other stuff that you mentioned, I believe it's at two levels.
Okay. The prognosis becomes more guarded when you add levels. If it's a one-level fusion, outcomes with a good rehabilitation program, outcomes are good. But every time you fuse another level, the prognosis drops by, I hear from the surgeons I work with, 10 to 15%. And that's the risk. What's critical if you do have that kind of surgery is you need really, really good hip flexibility and really good trunk strength and stability. And so the better shape you go into a procedure like that, the better. And you need to be on a good rehabilitation program for months and months following that surgery.
Jesus, sounds expensive.
Yeah.
Well, it is expensive. It's an expensive procedure, and MRI is not cheap either. It's an elective procedure unless you're having numbness, weakness, and as I said, the bowel and bladder problems, bathroom problems. Those are the things where surgery really needs to be a strong consideration.
One of the things that people often think about when they contemplate having surgery is how much improvement they can expect to have over their current situation. That is, what's the margin for gain or improvement? And for some people, they are functioning so close to their, you know, physical capacity already that surgery carries more risk than it carries the potential for benefit. So that's one of the things that you and your surgeon need to have a serious conversation about.
Yeah. The other thing, Al, maybe is talk to the surgeon and see if you can speak to a couple of the patients who have had similar procedures for similar conditions. And so you can speak to them and ask them what their experience has been. That may be helpful for you, too.
Good luck, Al. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call.
Thank you.
Let's turn to Ann in Milwaukee next. Ann, hi to you.
Hi. I have patellofemoral syndrome, and I wondered what your suggestions were for exercises or whatever.
Okay, well, what is that?
Patellofemoral stress syndrome is sort of a large garbage basket, we would say, group of problems that relate to the kneecap. There are a number of underlying theories as to the cause of patellofemoral pain, but it can differ in different people, which is why a cookbook approach doesn't help. One of the fundamentals that we know about it is that having good, strong, well-functioning quadriceps muscles helps, as well as having good flexibility in the hamstrings and good strength in the core muscles around the hip and pelvis. Different things cause this. It can be caused by a contusion. We see it a lot in the winter here in Wisconsin when people fall on their kneecap and you stir up the undersurface, it causes kneecap pain. Sometimes it happens when your kneecap is too mobile, too loose. We see that in often young girls with hypermobility syndrome or people who have generalized joint hypermobility. In that case, we give them a program of strengthening and stabilization exercises to stabilize it. In people who get older, they tend to get hypomobility of their kneecap. It doesn't move as well. And so they need a program of mobility, which is why, Anne, it's hard to say exactly what you should be doing. But what you should be doing is working with a good physical therapist who can find the underlying cause of your problems. Sometimes it's related to foot mechanics. Excessive pronation in your foot can put undue stress on your kneecap. Weakness around the hip can cause a biomechanical abnormality that overstresses your kneecap. So you need somebody who can take a good look at your entire lower extremity kinetics and your strength and flexibility and design a program that fits your needs.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. And we turn to Catherine next from Reedsburg. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, how are you doing?
Great, thank you for calling.
I'm going to try to make my question as short as possible. I'm going to try to stretch my PCL, and I was given some exercises I could do. How do you gauge what is too much stretching? Because I don't tend to really feel pain right away. If I do something wrong, I feel it 1 or 2 days later. And how do I know what's too long necessarily? They said do it at least 30 minutes to an hour, but it's for my PCL, and I'm trying to it's got a contracture, and I'm trying to deal with that contracture.
Okay. So your knee doesn't straighten all the way?
Right. It's got approximately a 5% degree bend from a recent, I had surgery about 25 years ago, and they trimmed the PCL, and before they went into surgery, it was bent for about a month, and for some reason, it never completely straightened.
Mm-hmm. So it's been 25 years that it's been flexed this way.
Okay. And PCL, by the
way? It's posterior cruciate ligament. It's a ligament, the inside of her knee. You know, at this point in time, is it the PCL that's causing the loss of motion? Is it the joint capsule and all the other soft tissues that have shortened in response to the knee being in this flexed position? It's really hard to say. So basically what you're trying to do is stretch things that have been tightened for a very long time. Can those things actually change and remodel? Potentially, yes. Some people would say not after this amount of time. You could certainly try and see. The fundamentals would be you need long duration stretching, in which case I would suggest extension braces that you might sleep in at night that put you in a prolonged stretch for hours.
Right.
30.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say 30 minutes a day, it may help, but after 25 years of flexion, I doubt that you're going to make significant gains because you're going to be in that flex position for 23 and a half hours of the day, and you can do that math. So,
yeah, actually, I was when I said that, I guess what I should have said is that I was planning on doing it in intervals throughout the day, probably about 8 to 10 times a day when I'm able to sit, because one of them involves sitting down and immobilizing the knee,
right.
Lower tibia forward with a strap behind my calf.
Right.
I got a question, though, because I do want to try to work on this, and I do believe that I'm going to just, my only option is to work on it, you know.
Right.
By the fact that it may or may not happen, and then go from there. But contortionists or people, is it the ligaments that typically stretch on them? I know they do it for many, many, many years.
Right.
Are they dealing with ligament stretching? Is that the types of things that stretch on these particular athletes?
All kinds of connective tissue, the ligaments, the joint capsule, the musculotendinous units, the fascia, all the connective tissue that stabilize your joints stretch in response to that repeated load, that continuous load. So it's not just the ligament, but it's a lot of other associated soft tissue.
Currently, I don't have insurance to get this type of extender, so
okay.
If there's anyone out there that's throwing one out, don't. And call NPR and for a 5'6" person.
Well, you know, you could also, if you're in therapy, you could ask about them making you one. You can make one out of casting materials. You can make what's called a dropout cast. And that shouldn't be very expensive. They can make that for you, and you just use an ACE bandage to wrap it on. So I'd ask your healthcare provider about making one of those. It's a much lower cost alternative.
Yeah. Catherine, another thing you might consider is calling, going to the Yellow Pages and calling local prosthetists, orthotists. Sometimes people bring in equipment they no longer are using. Sometimes they make something that doesn't fit somebody and they have it on the shelf. You could also call some of the orthopedic clinics at the local hospital. Sometimes they have equipment as well that's used and there for people to use. It may not fit you perfectly, but that may be an option as well.
All right.
Yeah. All right. Appreciate it.
All right. You bet. Good luck.
Thanks a lot, Catherine, for calling. And we turn to Jim next in Madison. Jim, hello.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
So I'm a 30-year-old male I have joint pain in my arms. It seems to be both arms, and it kind of comes and goes. I've had two physicals in the last year, and you know everything comes back fine. And the only thing I can think of is my job. The way I lift boxes that are like head level and down, and I've been doing that for 9 years, and I'm just trying to, I can't figure out kind of what this is, and it has been kind of getting worse in the last year, it seemed like.
Jim, which joints in your arms are bothering you?
Like my elbows and, you know, it's like shoulder blade area.
Okay. And is it more pain or is it stiffness?
It seems like it's you know, stiffness, because once I get going, it gets better, but it's still kind of always there.
Okay. And how do you do first thing in the morning with the elbow and the shoulder blade? Is it stiff, or is it a good time of the day for you?
It's probably the worst time of the day.
Okay. All right. The well, it's good you had the physicals. When people have problems at joints, same joint, both arms or both legs, like you have to worry about something more systemic, a different kind of arthritic condition that is not the osteoarthritis that lots of us get. But I'm assuming they've done blood tests on you and other tests to rule those kinds of things out with your two physicals during the past year. You know, with your occupation, there some strengthening may be very good for you. You know, upper back trunk strengthening. That's where you need the stability to use your arms for the things you are lifting and not just focusing on your biceps or triceps. But a good strengthening program could be useful, and also even some flexibility to make sure you've got good flexibility through the chest and the upper back and the shoulders can also take some stress off muscles. So, you know, as long as you're comfortable that your physician has worked with you and they've done blood tests and ruled out some of the arthritic conditions that could cause this, you know, seeing a physical therapist for a couple of visits, you know, they should be able to put you on a good program that you could do independently.
You know, sometimes it seems counterintuitive if you're lifting boxes all day that what you need is strengthening exercises. But what we tend to see is imbalances. You're using the same muscle groups over and over again. And so those muscle groups get strong and shortened, and their counterparts on the opposite side of your body become lengthened and weak. And when that happens, you lose your base of support, essentially, and then you start transferring loads onto structures that weren't designed to take those structures. So we work on improving the flexibility in those things that are getting short and tight, and improve the strength and tone of those muscles that are getting long and overstretched. So that's what a strengthening program would do. It provide balance to counterbalance what you're doing at work.
As far as the blood test, when they took blood, you know, I guess they would just check for regular things. They didn't name anything specific like they were looking for as far as anything that had to do with arthritis.
Yeah. You know, like a rheumatologist, for example, there's different kinds of arthritic conditions. Rheumatoid arthritis, there's ankylosing spondylitis, where that presents primarily with stiffness, and first thing in the morning is really the toughest time of the day. And the blood tests are not foolproof, because not everybody who has this arthritis comes back with a positive blood test. But those are the kind of things that you would want to have checked for. So it would be more checking for some sort of systemic arthritic condition that is causing this stiffness that you have.
Yeah. Good luck. Thanks very much for calling, Jim. Appreciate it. Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, our guests here today. Jim Packard, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you have a question about an ache, a pain, a sprain, or a strain, I hope you'll join in. Larry Mueller here with my guests, Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault from the UW. Lori's a senior physical therapist at the Sports Medicine Center, and Bill, associate professor of physical therapy at UW-Madison. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org. And let's go to Marcus in Green Bay next. Marcus, hello.
Hi. I'm calling to ask how effective glucosamine chondroitin is on my arthritic knees. I had a lot of surgeries in my teens and 20s. I'm 52 now, and my orthopedic surgeon a while back recommended one of my knees, he said, should be replaced, and the other one, there's no cartilage left, but he might scope it one more time or something. So in the meantime, I'm putting it off as long as I can, and I just wondered about this glucosamine, you know, how does it help? Is it, you know, worth the money and stuff?
Have you started taking it, Marcus?
Yeah, I started taking it about a week ago.
Okay, all right. The research on glucosamine has shown that in many people it's helpful. Probably about half the people it helps. I haven't quite figured out what are the characteristics of people where it's successful versus people who are not successful. You need to take it for up to 12 weeks before you really notice if it's making a difference or not. It is somewhat expensive, but for people who are contemplating surgery, particularly joint replacements, it's a really good conservative alternative to give it a try. Many people are on it for years and years. That doesn't seem to be a downside unless you're allergic to shellfish. But otherwise, you know, the cost is somewhat prohibitive, but the research does support its use. People who take it tend to have less pain, use fewer pain medications or anti-inflammatory medications, even beyond what's considered the half-life of the medication. So it is supported in research. You have to take it about 12 weeks. If you're taking it, you know, 5 or 6 months and you're not noticing any difference, then you may be one of those people where it's not helping them. But it's certainly worth a try.
Good. I'll give it a whirl. Thank you very much.
All right.
Thanks a lot. Tim in La Crosse, we're on to you now. Hi, Tim.
Hi. Morning.
Morning.
I recently fell about a week ago, and I was fine. I had no pain, basically, or anything. And yesterday afternoon, all of a sudden, my rib cage started hurting like I had broken a rib or something. I'm just wondering if that could be a result of something coming from that long ago that...
Well, it's possible, but you're right. That would be unusual. You know, I having experienced a couple of cracked ribs during my lifetime, it was pretty evident quickly that something had happened. Tim, the pain you're experiencing now, can you put your finger right on the spot, or is it feel more?
You can.
And does it feel like you're on bone as opposed to in between the ribs?
Yeah, it feels like it's right on the bone.
Okay. All right. One of the things you can try is, and you do this gently, you put a hand over your breastbone and a hand in your back on that side, and you gently squeeze the ribs from front to back, and gently. And if that causes pretty intense pain in that spot, then I think you have to assume that you may have injured your rib. If you squeeze and you don't have any pain in that spot, then I would think more that it's soft tissue, although I still can't explain why it would be delayed that many days. But you can try that squeeze test, and if that causes significant pain in that area, then I'd go see your physician.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Email from Mike in Wausau has tinnitus, hearing loss, and howling in the ear, which can sound as loud as a passing train. Pressing on the jaw or sitting in a way that stresses the neck muscles can significantly affect the volume and location of the noise. Is there any type of physical therapy that might positively affect this condition?
Possibly. The temporomandibular joint, the jaw joints, they hinge right in front of the ear. And there are some soft tissue connections between the ear and this joint and ligaments. The first thing you want to make sure is that you've had your ears checked and that there's no medical reason why the tinnitus is there. It can come from medications. It can come from different illnesses. But I know of some situations where balancing out the musculature and improving movement at the jaw joints have altered some people's hearing. There's an anatomical connection between those two areas. So finding a physical therapist that specializes in head and neck care, so working with patients with headaches and jaw problems, you know, any therapist can at least do an initial exam and get treatment started. And that's what I would recommend.
All right.
It's worth a shot.
Dan in Madison, we're on to you now. Hi, Dan.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm 31 years old, and whenever I squat down, my knees crack horribly, and my ankles and toes also crack frequently. Neither is really painful, but I'm concerned that it's the start of a downward trend for me. So I'm wondering how bad of a sign is that, and is there other exercises that I can do to make it better?
In general, we don't lose a lot of sleep over snap, crackle, and pop in joints unless it's clearly associated with pain or an injury, you know, a change, and you fall down the stairs and then your knee starts popping and it hurts or it swells. So the sort of average snap, crackle, and pop, you know, I can't sneak up on anybody, we don't worry about too much. That being said, there certainly are things you can do to prolong the health of your joints. One is, particularly in the lower extremity, is to make sure you wear good shoes. In the summer, I know I'm as bad as anybody. I like to go barefoot. But having a good supportive shoe with good shock absorption, especially in this world of pavement, is going to be protective of your joints. Making sure when you squat down, you squat with good mechanics. Your knees should go over your toes, not rolling in or rolling out, but staying in a straight line. Exercises to keep your quadriceps and your hip and core muscles strong will also be protective of your joints. So those are the kinds of things that you can do to help save those lower extremity joints. Finally, keeping your weight down.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much for calling. And on to Peter in Madison. Thank you for calling. Hi, Pete.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good.
I had a spill on my bicycle about 2 months ago, landing on the right side of my body.
Yep.
And I took care of the infection and the wounds and stuff, and it's starting to feel better, but I still have a restriction of motion where, say, if I were to hold my arm out to my right side looking straight ahead, I can't go back with it without pain. I can, but it hurts. Or if I hold it straight over my head, I really can't go back much, and especially to the right. I get pain with that. I was wondering, is that just part of the healing process? And should I practice exercises that cause that pain?
A couple of things. It could just be part of the healing process. It sounds like there was enough soft tissue injury or damage associated with the fall that there could be some scar tissue that's forming that can lead to tightness along with any bruising and residual bruising that's still left in that area. You know, gently stretching into pain in most cases tends to be a good thing, but it needs to be a gentle sensation. You know, possibly, and you can try either heat or ice before the stretch. But you know, as Lori mentioned earlier today, you'd want it to be a prolonged stretch and a gentle stretch. You know, think of coaxing the tissue as opposed to banging up against the end of the mobility.
Okay, so slow.
Yeah, and you don't want to stretch into real sharp pain. You should be able to relax into the sensation. You know, and if that doesn't help after a week or two, Peter, if you can, I'd go see a therapist and just have examine your side and your shoulder. It doesn't sound like there's any weakness associated with this. It sounds like it's just tightness. Is that correct?
Well, I really used my left arm for the first month. I'd say the first month solid. I didn't use my right arm at all. But yeah. Now I bicycle. I can canoe. I can do everything. But boy, I get a sharp pain once when I do something unexpected in that motion. I do get that sharp pain.
Yeah, yeah. Well, like I said, I would maybe try the approach I gave you for another week or two, and if it's not significantly better, I'd go in and be seen. As active as you are, if you have limitations like that, you'll compensate and you'll adjust, and that'll put stress on other parts of your body. It'd be worth getting it looked at.
Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call, Peter. Dawn emailed us in her mid-50s. She's been diagnosed with bursitis in her right hip. She's had this since last fall but can't seem to shake it. Difficult to sleep on her right side for longer than 30 minutes at a time. She exercises regularly, swimming, walking, elliptical trainer, and stationary biking. She says, I do stretching exercises consistently that were given to me by my doctor. I also take ibuprofen and use a Fletcher patch as needed. But bursitis isn't going away. I'm wondering at what point do I turn to cortisone shots or something else, something I will be susceptible to as I get older? What do you think?
Well, it's been going on since last year. Sounds like she's doing a lot of the right things. Cortisone, a judiciously used cortisone injection into a bursa can be very helpful to get you over the hump. So when it becomes interfering, when it's problematic, where she can't do the things she wants to do, that's the time to get it injected. I mean, a couple things about itises, inflammatory conditions, bursitis, tendonitis. The longer they hang around, the harder they are to get rid of, and the more likely they are to come back. So in response to her question about worse as I get older, well, potentially, if this hangs around for a long time, it's more likely to come back. So there is something to be said for trying to rid yourself of it sooner rather than later. I'm concerned that the elliptical might be perpetuating the problem because of the continuous repetitive flexion and extension of her hip. In that case, the iliotibial band snaps back and forth across that trochanteric bursa, which is, I presume, the bursitis she's talking about. The other thing that if she hasn't seen a physical therapist, that a physical therapist would look at would be her hip strength. She didn't say anything about strengthening, but mostly about swimming and cardio and stretching kinds of things. And it may be that she needs some specific strengthening for some muscles to alter her posture somewhat. It could be that her posture is contributing to the bursitis.
Jeanette emails and she says, I'm 76 years old. 10 years ago, I was diagnosed with a stress fracture in the left femur, which through bone scans and x-rays shows is at the tip of the hip replacement rod. Sometimes I'm pain-free and can walk freely and exercise, but sometimes without warning, the pain returns and I have to stay off my leg using ice packs. A year free of pain can go by and then it happens again. In the beginning, I could use crutches, but now it's too difficult. A cane is also difficult since I'm still putting weight on my left leg. Would a walker help? You know, any restrictions so I can do something to avoid this unexpected occurrence?
Well, a walker can help. It allows you to put less weight on that leg. My question is, why is that sharp pain coming back? And I'm assuming Jeanette has, but if it's been a while, I'm going to go back and see the surgeon and talk about the hip replacement and just make sure that the replacement parts are in there solid and that sometimes they can loosen over time. But if that's clear and that's okay, and then seeing a physical therapist for, again, a couple of visits to look at flexibility, strength, walking pattern, I like to think that it could be eliminated and prevented from coming back again.
And one other thing would be to work with her primary care physician from an osteoporosis perspective, mm-hmm. making sure she's getting sufficient supplementation to maintain her bone density.
Let's go to Gail in Oregon next. Hi, Gail.
Hello. How are you guys?
Great. Thank you for calling.
Good. I had a total knee replacement in April 30th. I'm 61, and I was very happy with my new knee and doing good, and I was doing all my PT work and biking and walking and swimming and fitness and stuff like that and pretty good range of motion in it. And then June 30th, I had another health problem that I encountered and some surgery, and it put me down for about a week and a half, and all of a sudden I had a lot of swelling. And I lost some of my range of motion and been, you know, trying to get that back, you know, the bend and stuff like that, and haven't been able to do that. So my orthopedic surgeon plans to manipulate the knee on August 19th. And one of the questions I've had, I haven't been able to kind of get from the surgeons or PTs or whatever, and maybe there is no standard answer, but, like, how long after you have a knee replacement do you have to keep up this big regiment of really working hard? And once you gain, you know, if you get to like 115 or 120 or whatever, I mean, do you just do this forever and ever? Or once, you know, will you have the chance of losing it again, or do you just get into then a normal routine, or is this a lifelong activity, or how does that work?
Oh, what a good question. The connective tissue, we talked earlier about connective tissue remodeling. So you try to get that motion back. You want to get those connective tissues to remodel and understand that 115 degrees is normal range of motion for you.
Okay.
And once you establish that, then your daily routine activities, as long as you use that knee as you normally would, going through that full range from 0 to 115 degrees in your daily activities, it should maintain it.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to get it there, and it has to be there for a while. And then for a while, you know, 4 to 6 months.
Okay.
And then after that, hopefully your daily routine of activities will maintain that. Now, if you protect it and you stop using it and stop working through that range of motion, then you will lose it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a use it or lose it thing.
And I lost it relatively quickly. I couldn't believe it. And
yeah.
Is swelling kind of standard fare for a while after you've had knee replacement? I mean, kind of coming and going. And
it is.
Okay,
it does.
And does the weather truly affect it?
It truly,
like the last day I can hardly walk.
It does, because the changes in barometric pressure cause changes in the pressure in your joint, and joints are very sensitive to pressure changes.
Okay. Right. And does manipulation usually work? He says it's not going to hurt like the knee replacement, but
yeah, no, it should work.
Okay.
And but you have to be very diligent about the PT afterwards, because it's a trauma to your knee.
Yeah, okay. That's the best explanation I've had. So, like,
yeah.
I said, I've been very happy and looking forward to regaining, but and I've been on my bike and stuff, but I can't do it on my own. So he said, I can do that for you.
Okay.
All right. Good luck, Gail. Thank you very much for calling. You can join in, too, by the way. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. We have a couple open lines. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Let's go to Tom in Mequon next. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I have a two-part question. I had fallen off. I was knocked off a ladder about 15 years ago, and my right hip hit the cement from a standing height of about 8 feet high. And I've had trouble with the bursa sac on the outside. It gets very painful, and I've had multiple cortisone shots in it. And I had a surgeon tell me that he could actually remove that bursa sac, because he said that when they do hip replacements, that they take those out as a matter of course, and he said that they actually grow back, and he said that might help alleviate my pain. And my second part of my question is that my pelvis where it connects to my low back on that right hand side also is getting painful also now. And I was wondering what the people might think about.
All right.
Yeah, the bursectomy, that's the surgery to remove a bursa. Everything he or she said was true. Yes, they can take them out and they do grow back, but hopefully when they come back, they don't come back as beat up and traumatized as yours was. And so hopefully it won't give you symptoms.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. And the other part?
Yeah,
pelvis?
For the pelvis and the low back, I'm not sure how long you've had the pain, but certainly the fall itself could really jar things in that area. And it could be a combination of, you know, of a joint injury as well as, I'm sure, some soft tissue injury. Tom, have you seen a physical therapist within the last couple of years for the hip or back complaints?
I've seen them throughout the last 15 years. I've gone like three or four different times, and that That was not really able to help me. Okay. I've had multiple shots. I've seen chiropractors. I had a raw thing was done to me.
Okay.
And nothing really helped.
Okay. All right. Exercising in a pool. Have you done a bunch of work in a swimming pool?
No, but I don't really have ready access to that.
Okay. Okay. Because sometimes that can be a good medium to be pretty aggressive in terms of strengthening, especially core trunk strengthening. You know, it sounds like you may, if you decide to go the route with a bursectomy first, because certainly that's impacting how you're walking and standing, I'm assuming, and that impacts the posture and position of your spine. And so maybe that's what you try to take care of first and see if that makes a difference with your back. And if not, you know, either try finding another spine specialist in rehabilitation, a PT, and see if they can just come up with a different plan for you.
Yeah. There you have it. Thank you, Tom, for calling. Appreciate it. And we'll go to Doug in Milwaukee next. Doug, hello to you.
Hi there.
Hi. What can we do for you?
I'm a 46-year-old triathlete, and 2 weeks ago today, I went over the handlebars and broke my collarbone.
Ouch. Ooh, a la Lance Armstrong.
I guess. I think I have a good orthopedist here in Milwaukee, and I go see him again in a week. I'm wondering, how long am I likely to be unable to swim? And when is he likely to give me the clearance to run?
Well,
just give me an idea, because I'm kind of bummed out about this whole thing.
Okay. Swimming, well, you're going to go back and see him in a week?
Yeah.
I'd ask him if I could do some deep water exercise. Are you doing any exercise now at all?
I'm on my stationary bike.
On your stationary bike, okay. I'd ask him about things like deep water running. Huh? I'd ask him about things like flutter kicking in a pool. I can do vertical kicking. I'm trying to quickly go through my head the mechanics of single-arm swimming, if he would let you do that, if that would significantly impact the clavicle on the opposite side. I don't think so. I think if you kept one arm down by your side, the question is whether or not he'd trust you to do that.
I don't know if I'm a good enough swimmer to do that anyway. I might just go in circles.
But there, you know, there's a lot of stroke drills that you could do that would get you back in. But in terms of getting back in, how bad was your fracture? Was it a single fracture through that mid-third?
Well, there was one loose piece, but then the other two were overlapped.
Okay.
They were not overlapped so much that he needed to plate it.
Okay. All right. And that was how long ago?
2 weeks.
2 weeks ago. Yeah, I mean, generally they say 6 weeks. So the problem with swimming is it's an overhead activity. And when you reach overhead, you get a lot of rotation of your clavicle. And it's not going to like that if it's not solidly healed. So swimming's going to be one of the last things. Running, you know, I don't see any reason why you couldn't deep water run in a pool with a belt on to get that going again. But in terms of the running and jarring, it's not going to be great until 6 weeks, probably. I'd say 6 weeks.
There you have it.
All right, thanks.
Okay. Yep, thanks. Sorry to be the bearer of bad news.
We had Jim email us and says, I sculpt in wood and various other materials, which caused me to grip small and medium-sized tools quite tightly using mallets and force of hand. I can't say if this results in the stiffness I feel in my fingers or my age. I'm pushing 60. My fingers at the knuckles are more often stiff than not. I do the open shut finger exercises, which seems to loosen my joints for a short period of time. I take ibuprofen, but still does not offer a lot of relief. Is this arthritis setting in, or what can you do to relieve the stiffness? And what else can one do to relieve discomfort?
Well, it probably is arthritis or arthritic changes at his age and the kind of work that he does. Anytime you hold a joint in a fixed position for a long period of time, whether it's sitting, standing, or gripping, particularly if you're doing it with force, it puts a tremendous load on your joints, so it's not going to like it. Thus, the opening and closing, which is a great strategy to loosen it up again and relieve that. I guess my best advice for Jim would be to find tools with ergonomic handles. I would expect that somebody makes the kinds of tools that he uses with a larger grip. They make pens, they make forks, they make pretty much everything with a larger grip size. So getting something like that that will offer, and it doesn't even have to be every tool, but just to get some variation in the size of his grip so he's not holding the same grip in the same position all the time.
Paulette and Marinette, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Paulette.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question today about, I have bunions and heel spurs and plantar fasciitis, and I don't have a lot of pain, but I have stretches that I do, and that helps. But I walk a lot. I walk for fitness, and I do get some pain in my heels sometimes. I wear an orthotic devices in my shoes. And I'm just wondering if there are some exercises I can do that can strengthen my arches that would relieve this pain, or is this something I'm just going to have deteriorating problems with for the rest of my life?
Yeah. What do you think?
Well, if the pain is coming from the bone spurs that you mentioned, strengthening is probably not going to make a huge difference. It may change the posture position of your foot that could help a little, but the orthotics are a good idea. I know there are special orthotics or different heel inserts to take pressure off the spurs. I don't know if they still call it a donut or not, the kind of heel insert. There are heel inserts where there's pressure around the outside of your heel, and then there's no pressure in the spot where the spur is. So I don't know if that is how your orthotic is set up or not. But that may be something to consider. You know, for strengthening, you know, kind of thinking of having your feet in sand and kind of curling your toes up underneath your feet, you can put your feet on a towel and a sheet, and then just kind of work your toes, curling your toes underneath you, pulling on the material. That can help strengthen. Your flexibility is really important for you, the things that you're currently doing. Those are probably the best suggestions I have. But again, if it's the heels in particular, there are different kinds of heel cups that may or may not be able to be worked into your orthotic that may help.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Lori Tyne-Brody and Bill Boisenault, our guests. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We'd like to help you with that ache or that pain or sprain or strain, and we can give you that help if you call us at 1-800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. Lori Tyne-Brody, Senior Physical Therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center. Bill Boisenault, Associate Professor of Physical Therapy at the UW-Madison. Our guest today, Deanna and DePere, will turn to you now. Hi, Deanna. Thank you very much for calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call. When I was, about 18 years ago, I was 50, I fell, tore ligaments evidently around my ankle. I wore a boot for 3 or 4 weeks, however long, and everything seemed to be fine. And now, 18 years later, I suddenly get a sharp pain in that ankle when I take a step. Kind of, you know, takes your breath. It's so sharp. Is that related or is that old age?
It's in the same ankle that you injured,
mm-hmm.
and you don't have a sharp pain in your other ankle?
Mm-mm.
Then I'd say it's probably related to the injury. If you had an injury that was that severe, you can think of it a little bit like spinning your tires at a stop sign. When you have that kind of traumatic injury, you take some of the years off your joint surfaces. So that ankle is probably aged a bit more than your other one.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're getting sharp stabbing pains when you step down on it, then you need to see somebody about it and find out the cause of it. You know, generalized aching and discomfort is one thing, but sharp stabbing pains are something where you need to be seen. It could be, you know, there are all kinds of things like osteochondral lesions. You may have, some arthritis that has now worked its way to the point where you may have loose bodies in there that get caught in between your joint and will scuff up your joint surfaces or things like that. So this is something that needs to be seen.
Okay. That's what I guess I needed to know.
Okay. All right. Great.
Thanks a lot
good
for
luck.
Calling. Yes, good luck. Kate in Madison, on to you now. Hi, Kate.
I just had a question. It's not that big of a deal, but my arms and my hands fall asleep a lot for apparently no reason. Like sometimes if I'm just laying on my back in bed, my fingers start to get tingly, or sometimes like if I'm sitting in the car, for, you know, I'm not doing anything out of the ordinary, and I'm not sitting in one position for a long time, but my hands just start to fall asleep and feel really tingly, and I just kind of wondered if I had some bad wiring or if this is something that I should get checked out.
Kate, how long has it been going on?
Probably for 5 or 10 years, but it's over the last year I've noticed it a little bit more. I'm 30, so I just kind of have noticed certain things a little more lately.
Okay, and then how quickly does it go away?
If I change position, it will go away maybe in a minute or two.
Okay.
But, you know, it's also, I know if anybody lays on their side for a long time, things fall asleep, but
yes.
When I lay on my side, it falls, my side, my hands and feet even fall asleep in a minute. I mean, I can't do that for more than a minute before it falls asleep.
Okay. Okay. There can be a couple things. It can be vascular related. It can be related to nerves being, you know, compressed or overstretched a little bit. You know, the fact that it has gotten worse, and there's been no trauma, no explanation for why it's gotten worse in the last year?
Nothing.
Okay. All right. You know, I would go see your physician and
okay.
have him examine you and, you know, explain all the things you explained to us. And, you know, if they examine you and they can't find anything, then I'd go see a physical therapist. Maybe some postural things they could work with you on, some, you know, some stretching and strengthening that can change the pressure on the structures that are causing the tingling. But I'd go see your physician first here.
Okay.
All right. All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Kate. Good luck. Josh in La Crosse, we're on to you now. Hi, Josh.
Hey, thank you.
Sure.
Last year, I was in an accident in a minivan and was ejected from the sunroof.
Oh, my.
Had a pretty serious injury to my shoulder. Actually, I didn't think it was all that serious at the time, but now it's been almost a year and I'm still having pain. I had an MRI done last January. They found a 60 to 70% tear in the supraspinatus.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if there's anything I can do. They gave me a cortisone shot at that time, but I was wondering if there's something I can do besides surgery to correct it.
Oh, my, yes. Have you been to physical therapy?
Haven't tried it yet, but I was hoping you had good news for me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We see your supraspinatus is one of the main muscles of your rotator cuff.
Mm-hmm.
And people tear their rotator cuffs for all kinds of reasons and have very successful outcomes. So cortisone shot probably worked to help beat back some of the inflammation that was probably happening at the time, but then you need to rehabilitate the muscles. So you need a good physical therapy program that works on strengthening the remaining portion of the rotator cuff, as well as other muscles that can help compensate for the rotator cuff, as well as the stabilizing muscles for your shoulder girdle so your rotator cuff doesn't have to work so hard, and on and on. So is it your dominant arm?
Yeah.
Okay. And what kind of work do you do?
I'm a carpenter.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Yes. Get yourself to a good physical therapist who can take that into consideration, especially in your occupation. You're going to need a good, strong shoulder. So
you should
do well.
Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. And Ann in Annawa, Illinois, your turn. Hi, Ann.
Hi. I have a pretty pronounced bunion on my right foot. And I'm wondering whether bunion surgery would ever make it straight enough so I could wear normal shoes again.
Well, the answer is yes. The surgery can straighten out the toe, and which will allow you to wear more regular shoes. The question is, will it stay straight? And that's where, after the surgery, you need a good rehabilitation program. And so someone to examine your foot and see if you need an orthotic more long-term, because the bunion occurs for all kinds of reasons, and if the underlying cause isn't addressed, then after the surgery, it tends to come back again. So my answer is yes, but. Yes, it should straighten your toe out, but then you want a good rehab program afterward to make sure it stays as straight as possible for you.
Mm-hmm. And how long would I be off my feet and unable to drive?
I'm not sure the answer to that question. I would ask the surgeon, based upon how much work they presume has to be done, they anticipate has to be done by looking at your foot, could give you a better answer to that question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for calling. And let's see, Gretchen in Prairie du Chien. Hello.
Hi.
My question, I don't know if I exactly know how to ask it, so you'll have to help me. I, too, am a triathlete, but I've also done marathons and other things as well. And my left ankle, I hurt a couple years ago, and then I took a year off as far as just resting it. They did an MRI, and there was some Achilles tendon concern, tendonitis and stuff. But my thought is now, and I did really well staying off of it as far as, you know, this fellow that called earlier. That's one of the hardest things is just stopping everything when you get hurt. But the triathlons do allow the training to be cross-training, so, you know, you're not doing a lot of hard stuff on each area. But now, recently, I was taking a break off of a triathlon I had done, and I had some recovery time, and then I went out and I did a 9-mile run that had a fair amount of hills in it for the geography where I live. And it just, my left ankle kind of started hurting on the right side of my knee, kind of a tightness in my calf. It was all really kind of tight. So I, again, you know, tried to pay attention to that, did some, you know, the biking and then some swimming. And I ran flat the next time, and I did about 6 miles then. And that tightness kind of came back. And took a few days off, just walked, didn't do the impact, and ran a 6-mile run just a couple days ago. And it wasn't as bad, but, I mean, I iced it and did some ibuprofen then. Kind of what my concern is there any, this is where I don't know how to ask.
Well, let me ask you this, Gretchen. It's primarily your Achilles?
Primarily the...
No, it's up by my knee on the inside of my right knee. I've never sort of felt that.
All right, well, we're going to have to consider that for a few moments. Our guests today, Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, here on the Ideas Net. Dealing with aches and pains and sprains and strains here on the Ideas Net, Larry Mueller with my guests, Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault. Bill's Associate Professor of Physical Therapy at the UW-Madison. Lori, Senior Physical Therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center. And we have Gretchen from Prairie du Chien on the line, who had some recurring knee issues, a triathlete.
And... Right. And if I'm correct, Gretchen, you took a year off because of some ankle problems, and your ankle problems pretty much recovered, and then you started running again and training, and after this long 9-mile training run, you started having some pain on the inside of your knee?
Actually, partially correct. Yes, I took a year off and then had to start back again. But then I have been racing and training for over a year again,
uh-huh.
with everything being fine.
Okay.
And yeah, the left ankle might ache a little, but it didn't. It never
okay.
was an issue. Then I did this longer half Ironman triathlon, and I took over a week off. I felt great. You know, I was listening to my body, and I ran that 9-mile run, and then I felt this. Yeah, that tightness.
So tightness on the. On the inside of your knee. Okay.
Yeah, left, right, on the inside of my left knee, and then down to my ankle, that whole thing will kind of be tight.
Okay. Well, this is something you need to go in and have somebody look at this. The inside of your knee and the inside of your calf is not a common place to feel pain, unless you're older and potentially have some arthritis on the inside of your knee. But to have that kind of tightness in your calf muscle suggests that there's something someplace else. It could be some issues still with some musculoskeletal related to your Achilles in the past. But you need a good biomechanical evaluation, someone looking at your posture, looking at your foot mechanics, looking at your running mechanics, trying to figure out the cause of this. Could be coming from your hip, could be coming from the bottom and working its way up. But you need to be evaluated, particularly given your history and the intensity of your activity.
Okay.
All right.
Wonderful. Thank you.
All right. You bet, Gretchen. Good luck.
Thanks very much for calling. And Carol in Milton, thanks for waiting. Hi.
Hi. My 59-year-old husband went to Alaska for 2 weeks last summer and slept on the ground and has had shoulder pain and mobility problems ever since. He thinks it's related to sleeping on the ground because the trip didn't involve any kind of backpacking. It was day hikes, and so he wasn't carrying weights on his shoulder, and he's just put up with it. But I heard your comment about waiting with the itises kind of conditions, mm-hmm. and thought I should start nagging him to get in and have something looked at for this. Now, I called him quick while I was waiting and to verify what I thought I understood about the situation. He has pain pretty much all the time, but when he does stretches, and he's been doing some lifting of very, you know, like 1 pound weights. That seems to help, but he isn't really diligent about doing it. And his range of motion, like reaching across the front or the back, he can do it, but it's painful. So does sleeping on the ground bring anything to mind that could be a cause of this? And who would he see? He's going to Alaska for 2 weeks, in a week, so he's not going to get... And he's going to be sleeping on the ground. So maybe the other shoulder, and he can have them both done at the same time. But I was thinking maybe I'd try to schedule an appointment for him now so that when he gets back, he can get in to see someone. But we don't know who.
Yeah, Carol, I think it's a good idea. You can tell him that we're nagging him too, to get this. If time was going to take care of this by itself, he would have been better long by now.
Sure.
Sleeping on the ground, it's possible. If you're sleeping on that side, it stretches part of the rotator cuff. It puts some pressure on the joint. It is possible to bring on something like this. And the fact that he feels better, at least temporarily, with some stretching and some light weightlifting bodes well for him and is a good sign. But clearly, he needs more than that to get rid of this. And so I think a physical therapist can examine him and come up with a program. And, you know, the goal is not to fill his life with exercises, but can talk to him about his posture and specific exercises to help him get out of this, both short-term and long-term. And, you know, and for this next trip, he should, obviously try to stay off that shoulder while he's sleeping. I know if he's backpacking, you can't carry lots of pillows and things.
No,
but
it's... Yeah, no, he can't. They're being flown into the wilderness and they're rafting, so I'm guessing a pillow's not in his, gear. So.
Right. You know, whatever he can rig up to keep him off that side, so whether he puts...
Or sleep on the other,
sleep on the other side, or put his backpack behind his back so he can't roll over onto that side. But anyways, making an appointment now is a good idea so that when he comes back, he should be seen.
Not by a physician, though. A physical therapist should do it.
Yeah, a physical therapist can examine him and sort out how much of this is the shoulder, is part of it related to his neck, and they should come up with a good home program for him.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Well, Jim Packard just got back from a week in Alaska, but I don't think he was sleeping on the ground. I think he had a nice bed in a cabin.
Yeah, what do you know was up there, wasn't it?
Yeah, they were up last week. So he's just back from Alaska, but his shoulder's fine. Let's go to Deb in Appleton. Hi, Deb. Thanks for calling. Deb, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. A year ago, August 27th, my husband had partial knee replacements. He had the Oxford knee put into both knees on the inside. And since that time, he's still having a lot of pain. He followed his physical therapy to a T. He's not overweight. He's always been an active person. 2 weeks ago, he had his knees scoped again, and the doctor couldn't find out what was wrong. He said he cleaned out the areas in between the two joints. I'm not aware of what the names are. But he said he has no idea what's still causing the pain.
Okay, where is the pain? Is it on the inside of his knees where he had the replacements done?
Okay, on his right knee, it's on the outside of the knee. And there's so much fluid there again right now. They had him on steroids for 2 weeks. It looks like you've got two golf balls underneath the skin on the right side.
Okay.
On his left knee, the pain is on the inside.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Well, basically what he had was as she said, a partial knee replacement, where they don't replace the whole knee, but just the part that is arthritic in hopes to minimize the invasiveness of the surgery. So clearly his knees are still unhappy about something, thus the swelling. Your knees, a joint swells when it is unable to match the loads that are being placed on it. So, you know, in the absence of anything from the surgeon's perspective, that is loosening of the of the prosthesis, you know, mismatch in sizes and things like that, then you have to wonder if the other side of the knee is wearing out, if it's the if doing only a partial knee replacement was insufficient to deal with the arthritis problem. Another possibility is that a lot of times, you know, even after you have your knee replacement done, people still complain of that deep aching, and that comes from the bone. And when they do a knee replacement, they do a resurface. They put a new surface over the top of the bone, but they can still have, you know, subchondral bone pain. And then yet a third possibility is that that he hasn't addressed weakness of perhaps about his hips or flexibility issues that may be putting excessive load on his knees. So a physical therapist could help him from the perspective of doing an evaluation, looking at things like leg length differences, foot mechanics, flexibility about the ankle, flexibility about the hip, strength in the core muscles that may be overloading his knees.
Okay.
So I guess that's what I can say about it.
Yeah, I would agree with that, especially, you know, the right side where you have that fluid, that swelling. Yeah, you know, that's it's pretty clear the knee is what's talking to him on that right side. The left side, without the swelling, I agree with Lori that checking out the hip, sometimes knee pain can be referred from the hip. So, again, or sometimes from the low back area. Mm-hmm. So at this stage, to make sure they look up at the hip in detail and also in the spine and to see, besides the strengthening may be done up there, might that be where some of the pain is coming from?
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. And Esther in Baraboo, it's your turn. Hi, Esther.
Hi. Because of leg pain, lower leg pain, and some back pain, which started in the winter, I saw an orthopedist who had me have x-rays of my legs and back, and then an MRI and a complete bone scan. And it was found that I have some abnormalities and little bulges in the spine, but the worst was the lumbar region. So in May, I had a cortisone injection under sedation. I'm due to see the orthopedist again, but in the meantime, I was pretty good for a while, and then now the pain is worse in my left leg and also sometimes in the right. And I wonder, what question should I ask the orthopedist? Is this something I should be seeing a physical therapist? Is it a good to have more cortisone? Or do you have any suggestions?
Okay, those are all really good questions, Esther. And, you know, the fact you got some relief after the first injection is a good sign, but that's where a physical therapist can come into play. The injections are designed to decrease pain, maybe decrease some swelling, and that provides an opportunity to hit rehabilitation relatively hard. So the strengthening or the flexibility exercises or postural exercises, that's usually what the injection allows us to do, become more aggressive in rehabilitation so that the relief you do get from the injection, it can just be the starting point and more progress can come. So I think if you haven't seen a physical therapist for this, then absolutely, I think that would be a good thing. And they can also help sort out how much of your leg pain is coming from your back. And because sometimes it can be a combination of a low back and some local calf muscle problems or a knee joint problem that needs to be addressed in some different ways. So I think seeing a physical therapist, based on what you described, would be useful even before, if they consider an injection again, even before the injection, but certainly afterward to follow up with you.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. And Leslie emailed us, says, I'm a very tall female, 6'4", to be exact, and weigh about 200 pounds. Used to be a runner, but experienced severe plantar fasciitis and then a hamstring pull. Eventually recovered from the hamstring by not running, and because I hadn't been running, the PF went away. Subsequent attempts to start a running program resulted in re-injury of the hamstring. Currently, I walk 6 miles a day, and the plantar fasciitis has returned. I'm a sedentary office worker and don't want to give up the walking. What can I do to eliminate or alleviate the plantar fasciitis, if it can be alleviated at all?
Well, it should be, but it takes due diligence. Plantar fasciitis, the key factors, good shoes. I'm sure if she's walking 6 miles a day, she's wearing decent shoes. I would hope she's wearing decent shoes around the office, shoes that provide good support for her arch and provide good cushion. Stretching for the plantar fascia, if you're sitting in your chair and you take the involved leg and you cross your ankle over your knee, then grab your toes and pull your toes up towards your knee, that's a really good plantar fascia stretch. After you finish walking or activity, icing the area or taking a soda bottle, filling it with water, sticking it in the freezer, then rolling that underneath your arch to massage and ice at the same time. Then finally, and one of the more important things, I'm changing my position to put moving this higher up on the list of things is the night splint. So many people I know have had success with the night splint. It takes persistence, though, 2 to 3 months. You got to wear it consistently, and you will turn the corner.
And Diane in Eau Claire emailed and has a right ankle that she's twisted a number of times or bent on the right side of her foot, and then when I do this, I wear an ace bandage, she says, and soak it in Epsom salts for a few days until it feels better. But it's got to the point that it's always swelled both inside and outside. Doesn't hurt unless I walk uphill. Never had an MRI or x-ray done because I've stretched the tendons and ligaments so often. I have to be careful on uneven ground. The last time I did it, I heard a pop noise. Anything I can do, exercise to strengthen the ankle? I'm hoping to avoid surgery.
Oh, absolutely. There is a plethora of research on balance training and ankle strength and improving your balance. So I would see a physical therapist. Just a couple visits should suffice to get on a program to both strengthen the ankle and to improve balance. In fact, research right here at our facility by Dr. Keene and Dr. Tim McGuine showed that a preventative balance training program in high school basketball players significantly reduced the incidence of ankle sprains. So it works. It's been documented. And a good physical therapist should be able to set you up on such a program.
Marilyn in Bayfield County, we are on to you now. Hi, Marilyn.
Oh, hi. It's so good to talk to you all. I have a two-part question about the inflatable balance balls. I've been working on my core strength, and I thought, well, one of these chairs would be just great. And as an earlier caller indicated, at first I just loved it. But oh my, the day after.
Yeah.
So my two questions are, can you recommend some stretching exercises to reverse my problem? I don't want to do something to make it worse. And generally, what do you think of these balance ball chairs?
All right.
So that's the large ball that where you actually sit on it. It's built into the chair.
Right. It just sits right in the chair.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And did someone instruct you in what kinds of things to do on that chair?
Well, the directions that came with it were very, I think, very well done.
Okay.
I mean, it showed you what you should look like. It had photographs of real people.
Okay.
So I could make these comparisons, you know, and I thought I was doing the right thing.
Okay.
I suspect I may have used it too long.
Right. That was going to be my point, that it was a dosage issue, and that is how much you use it. You went from not using it all to a large amount of activity, and those balls are designed in contrast to a regular office chair to make you use your muscles to sit up straight. And so you're using muscles for long periods of time that you hadn't used for a while. And you probably don't really notice it at the time, but afterwards, it gets you. So I would say that if it seems to you as though the things in the instructions seem appropriate, then I would start small and use it for short periods of time and see if you can increase your tolerance to it. If you're not making any headway, see a physical therapist who can examine you and see if the exercises or activities need to be modified at all for you. Or if they need to be supported by additional stretching or strengthening exercises, because, you know, these balls generally presume normalcy, you know, a normal flexibility, strength, spine, and so on. And so the things may need to be tweaked a little bit for people who are not perfectly aligned.
Okay. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call.
Thank you.
And Jean in Big Bend emailed us and says, I've recently been told by my family practice doctor that I have a peripheral neuropathy condition. He didn't give me any prescription, but he's okay trying additional levels of B1 and B12. A lot of gardening and outdoor work this spring and summer seems to have increased my discomfort in my 80s, 83. Should I consider physical therapy?
Yeah, I think it's a reasonable thing to try. I think it was good she saw her physician, and trying the dietary things is a good idea. Seeing a physical therapist, and then Jean can explain specifically the activities she's having difficulty with. Because, again, there's sometimes some strengthening or flexibility or just some body mechanics, some instruction of how to bend or how to get in and out of those positions can be very helpful. And, again, a physical therapist will know within a visit or two whether they can or cannot help. But certainly is worth a try.
And Susan says, I have pain in my upper leg back hip area when I put weight on my right leg to walk upstairs, and pain when I try to do lunges with the same leg. I do not have arthritis in the hip. We know that via X-ray. What could this be?
Well, it could be lots of things with those activities. I mean, it can be a combination of muscle. There can be other joint problems besides arthritis that's not going to show up on an X-ray or plain film anyways. It can be a combination of muscle imbalances. Lori's mentioned that with a few callers. With those activities, again, seeing a physical therapist who can analyze the movement, you have the patient get into the lunge, do the kind of bending that they're doing, and try to figure out why it can't be done pain-free. There's lots of possibilities as to why, what's causing the pain. And, you know, an individual program could be developed for her, I would think, without too much difficulty.
Let's go to Julie in Oshkosh. Hi, Julie.
Hi. I have tendonitis in my Achilles tendon, my heel cord, and it developed, I don't know when it actually first developed, but I was in New York City for a few days in December, and it really started hurting then. I was wearing some shoes that are fairly flat, do have some arch support, are fairly stable. Then it kind of went away and has come back, and has specifically come back when I've been doing Zumba, which is a Latin dance-based cardio program.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering what you would recommend.
Okay. Achilles tendonitis, along with patellar tendonitis, is notorious for coming back. So it needs to be treated, and it needs to be treated consistently and through from start to finish. So I would go in and see somebody, because if you are active and you like to do things like dance, if you're up on your toes, if you're wearing heels or whatever, it's going to come back. So you need an aggressive stretching program and a strengthening program that consists of pretty heavy loaded eccentric muscle contractions. And there are good models for that. So I would get in and see somebody.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. And Lori and Bill, thank you so much.
Pleasure as always.
You bet.
Good calls today.
Yeah,
lots of
great questions. And I'm sorry we didn't get to everyone, but that's pretty much always the case. And you'll be back sometime in September. We don't have a date yet, but
exactly.
Yes, we will be.
Mm-hmm.
Lori Tyne Brody is senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center. And Bill Boisenault is an associate professor of physical therapy at the UW-Madison. And they'll be back sometime next month, and we will talk with them once more. And you'll have a chance to ask your questions about all those aches and pains.
taking a look at tomorrow at 11 o'clock, we'll be taking a look at your pet's health. And to do that, we have Dr. Sandy Sawchuk with us. Sandy is a clinical professor at the UW-Madison School of Veterinary Medicine. She's been with us a number of times, and she'll be back again tomorrow at 11 here on the Ideas Network.